Welcome to Inside the Mind. I'm Devin, and I'm interviewing John Glassburner and his experience of being a disc jockey slash DJ. So what got you into radio? Like, did you have any, like, inspiration from your family or something like that?
I did, in fact. I think what got me into radio goes back a long way in a couple of ways. One is, when I was a kid, I told everybody I was going to be a historian when I grew up. So I wasn't going to be a fireman or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was going to be a historian. And part of this has to do with a book that my parents gave me called something like Famous People, where there were these stories about these people. And I found them fascinating. It's the first book I can remember reading and being interested in. So later I became interested in Abraham Lincoln, and I was going to be a historian. And I think that's an important thing, because in the end, radio helped me come back to history. Hmm. The other thing I think it was really important, key to me getting into radio, was that my father was a professor of economics, but he was a very good amateur musician. In fact, he worked his way through college in dance bands playing the bass. And so he had a very large record collection for those days. And so growing up, I was surrounded by music. I didn't pay a lot of attention to it, but I sure heard it because I can sing all these show tunes from the show tune records they had. But he also had a very large jazz collection. So, you know, Miles Davis and Modern Jazz Quartet. And so I was introduced to all this music, even though, you know, like a lot of kids, I think I was not, you know, terribly interested in it. I heard it all, and it made a big impact on me. So I think those two things sort of set me up for, you know, what was to come for me in radio.
Mm-hmm. So it was like a little mixture of like following what you wanted to do, but you ended up going somewhere else. And then also kind of like a subconscious, like, because like you weren't really paying attention to the music, but it was still there, which kind of helped like imprint on you.
It was. In yeah. fact, later on, you know, if you would play for me, so Miles Davis's Birth of the Cool sessions, for instance, I could hum along with it. I knew all the songs, but I didn't know how I knew them. I mean, it didn't.
Yeah.
It was, I just heard them so many times, though. Another thing that was important for me was that at the end of my time in high school, I became interested in theater. My sister was in theater in college. And so I spent a lot of time at the end of my high school time and through college in theater. And there's I think you would admit, there's an aspect of theater in radio.
Yeah, you're almost just performing, but you're just doing it in front of the audience that you cannot see.
Right.
So it's almost a little bit easier because you're not really like, I guess you don't get stage fright as easily.
Yes, that's true. Although you do at times get stage fright on the radio.
I mean, yeah, but it's less common because a lot of times when I'm recording or like just talking, I forget that I'm recording. So it just comes out kind of naturally. I just remind myself, talk slower. Yeah. That's all I have to remember.
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
Now, the theater thing ended after college. I had to, like, go get a job and stuff like that. And I had children, stuff like that.
Drat, I have responsibilities.
I know. I had to grow up. And so that part of my life sort of went away for a while. And I was working at the Easter Seal School here in Eugene. And we bought 10 acres of land out past Cresswell, a mm-hmm. piece of property that you've grown up knowing, yeah. And we were building our house, and so the theater and radio, you know, was just not on my radar at all. And then my father, who comes back into the picture, grandfather, mm-hmm. Bruce, he gave me a stereo because I had no stereo in this house. We were living in what later became our chicken coop. And, and you know, a building that was torn down later. And so there wasn't much in there. But he bought me a all-in-one sort of stereo, probably cost $80 at the time. And he gave me a collection of records called the Smithsonian Collection of Classic Jazz, with notes written by Martin Williams. And it told the history of jazz, both in a very large booklet and also through all these recordings. It had like 7 or 8 LPs in it. These were records. Mm-hmm. And this fascinated me. So not only the music, but the history behind the music really fascinated me. And so I started collecting jazz records in that little house that later became the Chicken Coop. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly, you know, I was interested again in music and in doing something with, you know, this interest I had in the history of music.
Right. Okay. Another question. Did anyone like help you to get started, like financially or stuff like that?
I worked all my radio work at a nonprofit all the time. So there was no money involved at all. But what happened was that I decided that I wanted to do radio. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, KLCC, which was probably the prominent public radio station here in Eugene, it was situated at Lane Community College, KLCC, the LCC for Lane Community College. Yeah. And so it had the NPR shows, the news shows and everything. And at that time was considered a jazz station. So a lot of their programming was around jazz. In those days, you could simply walk in. They were looking for volunteers. You know what I mean? It'd be harder now, I'm sure.
It's kind of what I did to get in here.
Well, there you are.
I saw that it was an elective that I could get, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I walked in, and all right, I'm recording now.
Yeah. So that's what I did. I basically walked in and said, I'd like to do radio. And they went, okay. And then I started my training with a man, I believe his name is John Schwartz, who is a very nice guy who was at KLCC at that time. And so he was the one who helped me get started.
Okay. Did you struggle when you were like on the air, like maybe at the beginning, like maybe it was a lot more stressful or something like that? Or
I did, both at the beginning and really all the way through. So I don't think I'm really a born radio guy. Some people I know, like Jive and Johnny Etheridge, who we just talked about, just seemed to be born to do radio. Part of my training was with a guy named Taft Chatham, who did, a wonderful guy.
What an interesting name.
Taft Chatham, yeah, who did radio there at KLCC. And nothing seemed to faze him. You know, he would put on a track and then he would do all sorts of things, talk to me or do all this stuff. And he didn't even appear to think about what record he would put on next until there was about 15 seconds left on the record. You know what I mean? And then he'd amble over and he'd pull out a modern jazz quartet record or something and put it on. And just about the time the track was ending, boom, he was ready to drop the needle on the next track. Which, of course, is harder to do when you're doing records rather than CDs or digital music, because then everything's, you know, much more easily queued up. Mm-hmm. But John Schwartz was the guy who, you know, they put me in a practice studio, kind of like this one here, and I had to make a demo tape, sort of like what you're doing here, and then they had me sitting in with other people, basically doing breaks and stuff. And then they finally gave me a jazz show to do. I think it was originally in the afternoon and then later in the evening.
Okay. For those of you who just came in and to listen, I'm interviewing John Glassburner on what it was like being a disc jockey. Another question. Oh, where was the studio that you worked at?
It was up at, it was this little bitty studio up at Lane Community College. So it had an on-air studio, and it had like one really good full-size production studio, and then several different ones that the news people would use and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it was there. The KLCC studio is now downtown. They've moved downtown to a much bigger, really nice studio, which is, you know, is a lot different because studios look a lot different now than they did when I showed up there in 1980.
Okay. Did you have a specific style to your work? Like, was it more like, did when you were when you were on air, was it like, did you keep a more relaxing, or try and keep it more relaxing to like work with the music, or did you just, yeah, you get the idea.
I do. That, and it's a good question. First of all, I tried to keep it conversational, and I think I'm pretty good at that, sounding like I'm just talking rather than sounding like a radio voice or something like that. And so I think I was good at that. And so stylistically, making it sound conversational was important to me. Back to my interest in history, a lot of the shows I did were very thematic and tended to be historical. Since I'm essentially a non-musician, a lot of my interest in music tends to be in the history of the music. And so I would do shows on whoever, on Don Byas, who was a wonderful tenor saxophone player. Okay. And so I would try to collect as much as I could throughout his career and talk about his career and talk about who influenced him. And so a lot of my style came from the fact that I was doing very thematic work. And then another thing is the last show I did, the one I did the longest, I integrated a lot of stuff about myself in it, which I wouldn't do anymore. But at that time, I would do these intros that had to do with myself and my family that would somehow weave their way into the music. And at different times, I had family on. So your Aunt Sarah and your mom, Liesl, would come on the air during International Women's Day and stuff. They would take over the radio station, and they would come on the show. And so there was some of that going on.
Well, we're running out of time, so we'll have to wrap this up. So
are we? Are we at 15 minutes already?
Yeah.
Wow.
Time flies. So the last two questions. Why did you stop?
Okay. I stopped because I was retiring from work. So, this was not my job. This was something a side hobby. It was. And so as a job, I worked all those years at the juvenile court. Mm-hmm. And when I retired from there, I wanted to give up anything that would keep me from just going sailing. And so I gave up anything, any committees I was on or anything that would, there would be regular demand on my time. I gave it up all at one time. And so I gave up the radio show at that time.
Okay.
Which would have been about 2006.
Oh.
I think I told you this because we were doing an interview, is that for 1 year I did an interview show. What was it called? Sunday Brunch. Hmm. And since my career had been basically as a mental health professional, the idea originally was to do a lot of have guests on who were in the mental health, that they worked in the mental health field. And so I did that for 1 year exactly, because I promised I would. It was an hour-long interview show. But what I discovered, Devin, was that I really wasn't very good at interviewing. I was a pretty good DJ spinning discs and everything, but I wasn't a very good interview. And before we give it up, since you said you could cut this down to the right length. Just sitting here in the studio is interesting, because when I showed up at the studio, it looked a whole lot different. So first of all, there were turntables. Here in the studio we're sitting in right now, there are no turntables for records. But at that point, records were terribly important.
Yeah.
And there was a whole lot of taping going on. Now you don't use tape, So when I sat in the studio, there would be these reel-to-reel tapes which were turning around. They were like taping NPR, a feed of NPR. So there was tape going on. You have a board here. You have these two screens you're looking at. Mm-hmm. There were no screens, no computer screens going on at all.
those were a luxury in like the 80s, right?
Well, these didn't exist. It wasn't. Yeah.
It was like they were either a luxury or they did not exist.
The board, you have a board with some sliders on it. Mm-hmm. The board, when I started, had what they called pots, which were these big black knobs you turn louder and softer like that, right? Mm-hmm. And then you could see the needles, just very much like those needles you have there on the board,
yeah,
that would show you your volume. And then when you wanted to play a public service announcement, like an advertisement, you had a cart, which looked like an 8-track tape. And I know you don't know what that looks like, but it's like a big cassette or something that you would stick into that machine and it would play your...
Yeah, I've heard of an 8-track tape.
Yeah, so everything looked a whole lot different than it does now. Everything's digital now.
All right, last question. Do you regret stopping?
You know, I don't. So I really enjoyed my time on the radio at KLCC, but it was good to get away from it. I mean, it almost became a chore near the end, putting together these shows, which I would pre-script, really. And I was ready to be free of all of that. And so I had the best of all worlds. I loved doing it, and I was happy to step away from it.
All right. That's nice.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Why are you doing, since you're my grandson, I'm interested in what interested you in doing radio?
It was a little bit of a mixture of almost practically an accident, because during this trimester, there was a scheduling mistake for me, so I was missing a class. So we had to do a little bit of rearranging, and I also had to get a new elective, and it was either conditioning, which I didn't really want to do, and radio, which I know you kept bugging me about joining the radio because I had mentioned it like once. So I was like, well, I guess I'll join radio.
So at least part of it was my bugging you.
Yeah. Well, part of it was your influence, and the other was an accident.
Well, I'm very happy, Devin, that I was able to influence you to do radio, and you're obviously really good at it.
Thanks. All right, well, this was Inside the Mind. I'm Devin, and this was an interview with John Glassburner. See you never.